As I said, we'll just move into the sit. So I'm going to invite each of us to allow the body to come into a posture that allows you to feel upright and alert. And this might mean that you're lying down or standing. It doesn't have to be actually sitting, but it's inviting in the energetics of this ennobling practice, upright, alert, available to these practices, which are so deeply nurturing and ennobling. Checking out how, and actually, for those of us who are spending still a fair amount of time on the screen, like this, even imagine just leaning back a little bit, actually leaning back or leaning into the back body to kind of fill out that circle of space that they tell kids and their little hula hoops. That's our personal space. And just to allow yourself, before we get going, just to kind of feel into this circle of space of this body or the energetic field. Lean back a little. Allowing the energy to drop it down and back. I've shared before in a training with Peter Levine, he invites us to put our attention like the lower half of the spine, just inside. So it's really down center of the body and then back. Or again, as I mentioned before, that Dantian, sort of the space right behind the belly, as anchoring, particularly for women, to be able to feel into that area as a power source, which may be uncomfortable for some, and in which case, just let it go. And stay with this theme I've been on in my own sits and as we've been doing and working with the mind. But again, first, to allow there to be a dropping in and a connection to the body. Again, for many of us as women, our relationship to our body is complicated. Yeah. That's another thought. But sort of honoring that and the ways in which it's not always or may not be comfortable to be in the body because of our histories or traumas or what any everything else. Okay. To the degree that it is possible, can we allow ourselves to find a place of rest in this fathom-long form of ours, which is said to hold all of the teachings? Allowing ourselves to nestle in to that place that feels comfortable. It might be a toe or part of the arm or the core. Yes, there will be undoubtedly parts of the body that are uncomfortable. Okay. Is there also a refuge of either neutrality or comfort or ease? Anyway, there's a thing there. Rest there a moment. Oh, it is possible to relax even just a little into this body of mine. Feeling into the bones. Resting in the bones. I will often do a scan of the bones from the skull, the jawbone, the vertebrae, rib cage, pelvic bowl, long bones of the arms into the little bones of the hand, long bones of the legs into the little bones of the feet. Can we allow ourselves to rest in these bones of ours, this earth element? And for some, this might be a place to stay. It's to stay in relation to resting in the bones, the skeletal form of ours. Absolutely, you're welcome to do so. For those who might want to sort of stay on the thread that I've been on in terms of working with the mind, is to invite you to, again, rest in the body. Keep 75% of the attention in the body. And with that other percentage, just watching the mind. I say this every time. It just amazes me that we can watch the thinking mind. And in so doing, cultivate our capacity to make choices, understand ourselves, and ultimately find freedom. Not be so under the dictatorship of an unruly and often unkind mind. But rather beginning this, undertaking the training to befriend the mind such that this mind of ours is a friendly place. It's a place of welcome and rest. It's not a place of judgment. We start, you know, in order to get there, we just watch. Oh, these are the patterns of the thinking mind, much like we watch the patterns of clouds. Yeah. Oft-given suggestion of the blue sky mind. Thoughts are like clouds. Okay. So just watching, what's the pattern of the thinking? If it's judgment or planning, figuring something out, list making, comparing, complaining. Okay, all is fine. You know, it's fine. We're just being curious, nestled in our bodies, almost like the visual of like, I don't know if we were, you know, if we were in together outside on this beautiful grassy field, being able to look up at the sky together. And each of us would see the different cloud patterns of our minds. Again, anchoring that in our body on this earth. Oh, check this out. These are the patterns. They may be fluffy clouds. They may be storm clouds. Okay. Thoughts are ephemeral. There's no substance. Again, learning in as much as possible to relax into the body of that image of being on a grassy field together, looking up at the sky and watching the patterns of the mind in this image of the clouds. Please remember, there's no such thing as a bad fit. We come, we take our seats, we see how we are, how it is in this moment to be alive and breathing. Remembering to lean into the circle of our Dharma sisters here. Yeah. We may be in houses or apartments or parks or in cars by ourselves, but we're in Sangha. Yeah. So leaning into the community here. Oh, nice. Thank you, Carlita, for ringing the bell. Yeah, so lovely to sit together. And what I'd like to talk about today, in part, I've been prepping for tomorrow's class and read from reading and working with one of my favorite books, which I quoted here all the time, Christina Feldman's Boundless Heart. And I wanted to share these a couple of, as an intro to where we're going to go today, this idea of the path that we're walking in the kind of parlance and of like, oh, on the Buddhist path or walking the path, and was struck by how she writes about it in this question, like, what is this path? So that's kind of what we'll be exploring together today. So I'm going to read a little bit from her book. Equanimity is a pathway, a way of being present in a seed we cultivate, an ongoing journey of investigation. Just as life does not stand still, frozen in time, exempt from change, equanimity is equally fluid, a responsive way of meeting our shifting life, our changing body and mind, and all the events we are asked to embrace. It is not developed in the most sublime and peaceful moments in our lives, but in the moments we feel most agitated and shattered, most lost and unbalanced. The path of equanimity asks us to consider the question, the path of equanimity asks us to question whether it is the events and changing conditions of our lives that shatter our hearts or our reactions to them. The path of awakening invites us to develop the profound insight that is the foundation of a heart that can abide in a boundless stability in the midst of the unstable. I'm going to read that again. The path of awakening, to which every one of us here is, because of our attendance here and our participation, is on this path, however much we claim it or we don't. The path of awakening invites us to develop the profound insight that is the foundation of a heart that can abide in a boundless stability in the midst of the unstable. The path of equanimity begins with the awareness of the places and moments where equanimity most easily vanishes. Our life is an unceasingly, almost unstoppable flow of events, one following the heels of another, like a river that emerges from a spring and begins to flow. In the course of the river, there are stretches of white water, places of calm followed by rapids and whirlpools that once more even out only to turn into a waterfall. We can no more stop the river than we can shield ourselves from the events that touch us with their joys and sorrows. And I love the way she writes. But this image of, the image of the pathway, and I don't know if you noticed, I say this as a therapist who has a picture of a pathway on my website, but it's like all therapists seem to, many therapists' websites, we have this picture of the path, right? Path through the woods, path by the water, path on a cliff. And this notion of really embracing this path that we're on through our lifetime. And oh my gosh, does it take unexpected turns and over hills and dales that we never actually meant to go on. But it is this pathway, and being able to invite in a dimension of this path that we're on, I'm like, oh yeah, this path of awakening, to have a capacity, a foundational capacity of the heart that can remain steady in the ceaselessness of all that changes around us. Right? And what a beautiful aspiration. And how do we allow ourselves to make contact with this path, right? In the walking meditation, it's like, foot on the ground. Can we feel the ways in which our body connects with the earth as a way of coming out of what can be this, and I use this in the Buddhist sense, not in the kind of cultural shorthand, but the deluded way in which we live our lives here and all the ways our minds can really spin us out, lead us down the wrong path, this notion that our thoughts really often are quite unreliable, and being able to have enough clarity and insight of that voice that's so loud in my head might not actually be guiding me from the most wise place, right? We have all this, the sort of the inner chorus, and through this practice of insight and sitting with and being in that neighborhood that sometimes feels scary and is sometimes really beautiful, to be able to discern which are the more trustworthy voices. And I've spoken about this before. And how to allow ourselves to take comfort or take refuge, actually, and this notion of we are moving on a path, be it the river with all of its changing formations of water and rapids and stillness and waterfalls, or a path through the woods or in a field or wherever, that there's a momentum upon which we are walking. And can we allow ourselves to, can we avail ourselves of these teachings to help guide us, to have these landmarks of generosity, of kindness, of equanimity and joy? We'll get to that a little bit later in the talk. I was also listening to On Being podcast, which many of you have heard me quote interviews from all the time. And of late, this interview, I think it's pretty recent. And Krista Tippett, who hosts On Being Show, interviews J. Drew Lanham, who is a distinguished professor of wildlife biology and at Clemson University. He is a poet laureate in South Carolina, and he is the author of The Home Place, Memoirs of a Colored Man's Love Affair with Nature. And other poetry. And in this conversation, he has this most beautiful line, I think. Our task then has been pathfinding through the improbable without ending up at the inevitable. Our task is pathfinding through the improbable without ending up at the inevitable. And it feels almost more poetic than prose, almost like a koan. It's like, what does that mean? And kind of let the thinking mind settle, not trying to figure out so much, but just kind of feel into it. Pathfinding through the improbable without ending up at the inevitable. And then he goes on to say, we try to get through to that place somehow. How do we get through it to be whole and on the other side? How do you track that path in a way that doesn't send you careening over some hillside into some abyss from which you can never climb out? And that's the daily task now, because all of these things have been tossed down on the trail in front of you. They're like fallen trees. They're coming down the upslope, down towards you like rocks that have been knocked loose by something up there. And you don't know what it is. And you've got to try to get through all of that. Yeah, you knew the trail could get rocky, but you never thought it would get this rocky. And so here you are. So how do you get through that improbable? And this times that we're in ceaselessly, relentlessly, continuously of like, oh my God, now this, like, sort of, we look back at the last 6 years, whew, it's been a lot. Or we look back at the last 20 or 40 or 200, it's been a lot. And this folding in of wherever we are with relationship to COVID and what's happening with climate change, the wars, that of what gets our most attention now for many of us is the war in Ukraine and Russia, and what's happening in the sense of like, oh my God, now this, and that's the external. And this bombardment that's been happening, and as it has always been, but I think through social media and the context of which we can be bombarded is much larger than it was 100 years ago, for sure. That there's so much that is improbable, and so much. And how do we find a path through all of this? Again, that's what's careening down the hillside towards us, and that which is being generated from within, right? The disease, this the agitated mind. How do we get through the improbable? So the professor continues, well, I think that joy in part is the justice we give ourselves. Again, this beautiful comparing. Joy is the justice we give ourselves. And for me, the songs of birds are important. They signal the beginning of the day and the end of it and what birds are doing in their lives and carrying on. But I think joy must be something. You try to have joy as something that no one can take away from you. That's something that you can hoard and hold in your heart in a way, and you can protect that joy in a way that through all those things, this roughshod trail around you is threatening you, that you can still find a quiet moment and pull that joy out and experience it, even if it's just for a moment. The bird flying through the yard, you know, the cardinal, and he goes on to describe his relationships with the birds. But this, what I, again, just really loving that phrase of sort of how do we pathfind our way through our lives from, this poem will be known to many of you, I'm sure, Mary Oliver's The Journey. One day you finally knew what you had to do and began. Though the voices around you kept shouting their bad advice, though the whole house began to tremble and you felt the old tug at your ankles. Mend my life, each voice cried. But you didn't stop. You knew what you had to do, though the wind pried with its stiff fingers at the very foundation, though their melancholy was terrible. It was already late enough in a wild night, and the road full of fallen branches and stones. But little by little, as you left their voices behind, the stars began to burn through the sheets of clouds, and there was a new voice which you slowly recognized as your own. And how relatable this can be for the times, the sort of transition times in our lives when we've wanted to go somewhere and some part of us or those around us are like, no, you can't do that. And this, for whatever reasons, whether it's that cry of mend my life, stay here, take care of me, or being told, well, no, actually you can't do that. And how many of us can resonate with being told, no, not smart enough, not good enough. You can't afford it. The ways we can be shut down, those obstacles in the path that both we can generate ourselves with enough ease, but also that we, others put in our way, perhaps through some form of protection, or ways in which people will diminish and limit us. How do we pathfind our way through all the obstacles? Yeah. Alice Luderman's poem, which I don't have in front of me, it's entitled something about obstacles, but has the line like, the obstacle is the path. And being able to appreciate, oh yeah, this too. These challenges that we face often, and I'm considering in my own life, yes, this feels true, really are where the growth comes. Right. And there's a Tibetan prayer, like, may I get it? Hesitate to even say this. May I have enough challenges in my life such that I can truly grow. And I think I might have shared that before in the sense, like, who asked for that? It's like we get enough challenges without actually asking for more of them. But it's this idea of, can we be tenderized enough by the circumstances in our life so we can truly grow? Right. We need to bump up against something. Yeah. The image of the yogi in the cave up in the mountains for 4 years, great, comes down into the mountain place and starts shouting at people because he hasn't had to have the experience of bumping up against people, right? That was a Schopenhauer's porcupines. They come together, this herd of porcupines, like, ow, 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 and then they move back away from each other, and then they come back together, ow, 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 and come back. And how do we find our way? But we need each other. We need to be in community to be able to grow and find our edges, which is why our primary relationships are such profound spiritual practices, right? Our relationship with our kids, profound spiritual practices. Those difficult people in our lives are our greatest teachers because they reveal back, like, hey, look at this. This is blocking. This is some kind of hindrance of having a clear path. You know, what is it holding a mirror up to us such that we can check out, oh, this is where I am blocked. There's something within me that's not allowing me to have free passage around the challenges, the difficult people, the opportunities for our growth. Can we orient towards a sense of, great, okay. Can I have enough faith and capacity in my own resources to meet the challenge? That takes some doing, right? Learning the skills, the ways in which we ease into and work hard to cultivate that sense of faith that we can actually meet the challenges that come. Because I know certainly there have been times in my life of like, oh no, I don't know how to do this. I don't know how to get out of the hole that either I dug myself into or felt that I was dropped into. And those experiences of the, you know, to borrow from St. John of the Cross, so those dark nights of the soul when everything feels so dark and so bleak, and yet somehow, by the virtue of our being here today, we made it through. And so we may have the battle scars from the struggles and the challenges, but being able to look upon that which we have overcome, that's what we have faced, as like, right on, this is what I've been able to do, as a way of cultivating, and that's not actually the word, as a way of deepening our trust in ourselves to meet those challenges, to create and forge the path that we want to walk upon. And some of it is so much out of, much of it is so much out of our control in terms of the terrain. How we walk upon this path is so much under our control. Yeah. So let me ask you to close your eyes and we'll do a little guided meditation. So first is to check back in with the body, how your body's doing. Checking in with what your body is resting upon, the seat, the cushion, the floor, the couch, the bed, whatever. Each of us, and to the degree that different minds have different relationships to imagery, and I absolutely respect that, and I lean a little bit into imagery. This is how my own mind works, so bear with me if that's okay. But this, to ask yourself to kind of play with, what's, if you think about the path of your lifetime, what does it look like? And we can sort of go back as far as you would like to, from when you were born to today. Sort of as some of us, maybe it might be a pretty straight shot. A dear friend of mine in fourth grade, Tracy Prezant, knew in fourth grade she was going to become a doctor. She's a very successful doctor right now. She knew. Yeah. Some of us have that clear shot. And some of us, myself, one of these people, kind of go all over the place. Okay, so kind of just checking out, if you were to sketch or through a series of images, a collage perhaps, what's this path of your life been like? And just inviting in sort of as much imagination and creativity as feels appropriate. When you kind of play out this path, where if there have been wide stretches of ease and where has it felt like Mount Everest, you know? Just inviting you to kind of linger here a little bit. Perhaps being a little playful here with what this path has looked like behind you and where you are now. It's like fire lane path, tiny, narrow, not really actually a path, foraging path. It's a highway, whatever it is. And just, again, to be playful of what's this path look like now that you're on. And I want to invite each of us to consider, what are the signposts on this path of ours as we are pathfinding our way through life? What are the signposts that say this way? Is it the signpost of equanimity, of joy, of generosity? If you were to, as the path that you stand on today, looking forward, what are the signposts that you most want to see that say, yeah, yeah, sweetie, you're on the right path? Are they the heart qualities of the paramis of wisdom, of truthfulness, of sila, of integrity, wisdom, wise use of energy, equanimity, metta, generosity, forgiveness? What are the signposts that you want to have that point you, hey, sweetie, this is the way. You're on the right path. And again, allowing the mind to just be playful and creative of whether they're actually signposts with words, like the ones I've been sharing, or images. How do you know? What allows you to know you're on the right path? And what help do you want to invite in? You know, maybe the markers are pictures of teachers that we've had in our lives that have been so helpful, that may still be living or have passed, relatives that have passed. Images of them that can say, sweetie, you're doing it. You're on the right path. It may be hard. It may go uphill. It may go downhill. What support will you invite in through this imagining of road signs or markers along the path that say, yeah, you are walking this path with ease and grace, despite or in the face of all the inevitable challenges and heartbreaks, the sorrows and the joys We all have that kind of terrain in our lives.
Yeah.
We don't get through this life without it. But what, again, are the markers that allow us to feel as though we are on the right path? Again, if it's the heart qualities that I've mentioned, here lies joy. Here is a way to equanimity. Here lies the path of wisdom, of insight, of clarity. Finding our way through the improbable. One step, one foot at a time. Before I close, as an addition, I might be in developing mode, but on this pathway, as a check-in, where are the rest places? You know, the rest areas, the refuges. And again, sort of playful creative, is it to some beautiful florid meadow? Is it a sandy beach? Just allowing, again, in this unfolding, if the imagery is working, where are, as you gaze into the future of this path, building in rest areas, you know, building in refuges, building in places, signposts, markers of here, rest here, breathe, take comfort here, take shelter here. Places of intersection of our path together as we do this every Thursday. Yeah. These intersections of community and refuge. Can we avail ourselves of these markers that say you're in the right place? To stop here. Invite you all, if it's helpful, to kind of take in the path one more time. This path towards liberation and freedom that's right here in this very moment. And then when you're ready, I invite you to open your eyes and thank you so much for your kind attention and coming with me on that journey. So thank you so much.
Thank you for listening. To learn how you can support the teachers and Dharma Seed, please visit dharmaseed.org/donate.